welcome to Label Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting people about all the things you need to know in the world of innovation, business, design, tech, and culture. I'm Fazla Niso, all the way from Cape Town, South Africa, and today we're joined by Rosie Duncan, a new label mate here at Label Sessions, as well as Nick Sherrod and Josh Nixon from the Label Sessions team. Welcome, everyone.
Hi.
I didn't know we were doing that. Hello. It's good. It's okay.
Yeah. Hello to everyone today.
It's warming us back up. I can see this.
So we'll jump right in with a little bit of an introduction to our new label mate, Rosie Duncan, a communication consultant, author, and mental health advocate who spent her career helping organizations find better ways to talk about what really matters. Rosie, welcome to the podcast. I don't know if you guys are aware, but tariffs have been in the news. this new restriction
tariffs,
who is she? with new restrictions and political changes and key economies triggering massive cost and route changes, with most supply chains not yet fully recovered from COVID, we've now added in this new wave of fragility, and this has left companies really scrambling to understand this new world where certainty is no longer the norm. So it really goes, how should global businesses rethink their supply chains for a world that is no longer predictable? And I think this is just not just necessarily supply chains, but how should businesses really rethink in general for a world that's no longer predictable?
The short answer, I guess, based on the boardrooms we speak to, is they're going to have to find some way to make it more predictable. Because essentially, you can't run a business which has a long-term plan with this level of instability that's going on. So they're going to have to find a way through. I think that the kind of mistakes people make when they look at it a bit, I think, is to think that, the mood is changed on ESG. Therefore, that whole skill set has become less important. Whereas actually, in many ways, it's become more important. First of all, because companies are just accountable for their supply chains on a whole new level. So it used to, like a few years ago, you'd have said that purely from an ESG agenda. So in terms of environmental impact, now you've got people like them or loathe them or whatever, giving, instructions like make it in America, massive supply chain challenge, or just, you've got the finance director turning up, talking through the new costs that are coming up through a supply chain. So I think that the things they're going to have to do is find ways to build resilient supply chains where they know what they're going to do in different scenarios, but they're also going to try and find ways they can create those supply chains in the most dependable way that they can, right? Which might be moving countries, but it might be, they're going to have to find some environments where they can have some dependability. There's still going to be change in the world, but I don't think the system can cope if it has the same level of change that we've seen in the last few months. I think that's just kind of the reality of it, because it's kind of there's so many different scenarios. But I think that the thing that will become really important, therefore, for the next few years is supply chain accountability. You're going to have to be able to talk it through to the public. So the impact of it, the contribution you're making in different places, the places that you're doing business, and whether you're comfortable with that. But you're also going to be accountable on it on a kind of shareholder level, because all of a sudden there's certain supply chains that look great at the start of this year that now look like massive risk factors. So that's going to be a kind of double whammy, I guess, of accountability.
Yeah, that's a good point, Nick, about the public facing element of it, because people talk about the business side of things, and obviously the business side of things is very important and the stability needs to be there, but I feel like the general public, myself included, don't really understand how they work and what the actual repercussions are in my day-to-day. Like, you hear about all these stories, like you say, but as far as my actual day-to-day goes, it's like, what are they going to be the impacts and how is that going to spread?
Yeah, people don't understand it, but they understand it when a story pops up. So a story pops up about something being bad somewhere.
Well, it's like that the whole thing with the Pope going on right now about choosing a successor, and that, like you've said to me previously, the Conclave movie comes out, and people think that they're an expert on it because they've seen a movie.
And that's just internet culture in general. Everyone, people, in particular, Let's, you know, in particular, men on the internet can get expert very quickly, it turns out. You can watch
I don't mind if it's to do with like fixing something around the house, that's fine. I think obviously the resilience of supply chains is really valid point. And also really interesting when you're saying about all the ESG stuff, you know, everybody's had to be evaluating their supply chains a lot more in the last 10, 20 years. And I think it's also, if possible, is diversity of supply chain as well. Because if you do suddenly find that something's happening in China, you know, you're suddenly going to need to pivot to Ireland. I mean, I'm just putting random countries out there. Then you need to be able to do that quite quickly and have that set up, whether it's that relationship or whatever. And I think that could be a way of making your supply chain more resilient as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting as well, the kind of global spread, because actually when we've spoken to, we actually have a few procurement leaders on the label that are from areas of the world like the Middle East, where they've been very used to having big disruptions, so to speak, in terms of both in terms of because of political climate changes and somewhere becomes really hard to source from, or because it comes physically hard because there's a, you know, there's a change in their environment and you can't get things there anymore. This kind of, you know, pockets of knowledge around the world so that could become even more valuable to the rest of the world as they sort of face into this environment. One of the things as well that was interesting, and I was, and Rosie, giving you your kind of agency background as well, one of the things though, just the power of certain brands though has been demonstrated through this whole experience, because the kind of TikTok thing was, you know, the factories in China responding to the tariffs by saying, hey, look, this is how cheap, you know, a Lululemon bit of clothes is, or a, like a handbag from a designer, a maker. And that was an interesting thing. But one of the things I thought was really interesting was that people were then responding around going, hey, like in America, people could potentially buy those things a different way without the brand markup. But the real power of those brands is that those brands are sold in China at a markup. I thought it was just a really interesting example, which is just down the road from those factories, people will pay more to have the logo applied and for it to be from that brand. It's a real kind of demonstration of the power of branding. And in some ways, the importance of branding even more when supply chains become so disrupted, because your price point is going to be so up and down. The only thing you can depend on is that people really care and trust in that logo that you stick on a thing. It's a kind of counterintuitive thing, but in some ways, I wonder if it plays into the hands of those mega brands rather than being a threat to them.
Yeah.
Great way to demonstrate brand equity. I think it's one of the things that people understand very little in terms of how much is the brand valued at. So to see this is actually what the product costs, but you're still willing to go through with the markup and all of that, especially on luxury goods, because it really is about the brand value and the brand equity rather than just the sort of how much the thing costs.
Just the function of it,
Yeah. It also, I guess, allows you as the customer to really analyze what that brand is and where their supply chain is. So, for example, you know, I know there's a huge talk about boycotting American goods, right? And I have actually personally been trying not to use Amazon as much as you know, it's hard, but I'm trying. But the point is, if I then go, right, okay, I'm going to look at this brand, any brand, I can then look at what their values are, where their supply chain is. And I might go, oh, okay, you know, so actually their research and development is actually based in the UK. It's not in America. So therefore, and so it does help you make those decisions as well. Whereas unbranded stuff, you wouldn't even be able to do that because you don't know where to look.